Sarika Salmanen.
Thank you.
And I know that Greg will handle most of it tonight, but we're glad you're here. So, very good.
All right, let's go ahead. Hopefully I'll be able to get through this in 50 minutes or perhaps even less. Tonight I wanted to go through some revenues, and mostly the revenues for three funds, the general fund, the street fund, and the solid waste fund. And for reasons I hope will become apparent, these three funds are fairly well linked together. They're almost inseparable because in many ways the general fund funds the street fund and the solid waste fund funds a lot of things. So I think if those revenue sources somewhat comfortable at the end of the night, I think that we'll be able to, in the ensuing study sessions, turn our attentions to the expenditure side. As I said, it's a lot of times when you want to spend perhaps more than you think you have, there's a tendency at times to say, well, might we do a little better on sales tax or some other revenues? So I found it's always best to talk about revenues in the abstract. And once you become comfortable with the revenue amounts, then you can talk to speak to the expenditure amounts. It takes some of the risk out of trying to get your revenues to fit your desires rather than having your expenditure desires fit within what is a comfortable realm of revenue. So with that said, I did put little page numbers on the corners, and there are different size of papers. I guess I'm just strange. But the first page is the one you saw last week, and this is for the current expense fund. And it has the taxes, licenses and permits, intergovernmental charges of service, fines and forfeitures. And the last one that's actually not on here is inter-fund transfers, because those tend to just double money up. Because the money comes into one fund, and you recognize it. You transfer it to another fund, and you recognize it. And it really is not a true revenue source. It's just money being moved back and forth. But what I've tried to do here, and again, the colors will make a difference on the ensuing pages. So you can see on page one, taxes are red. So if you go to page two, and you'll find this format falls throughout the next few pages. And it really is, it's just a trend analysis. You can see the first two columns, you can see the actual for 13, the actual for 14, and then the components down below. And then on the first, although I should say the second box, is actually 2015. And in red, you can see what our actual taxes were for all of 2015. And then on either side, you have the actual wages through August. And on the other side of that, you have what the August revenues represented as a percentage of the total year revenues. So then you go over to the next few columns where you see that compare line. It's taking those percentages in August of last year and making an assumption that if we collect the revenues at the same rate as we did between August and the end of the year last year, for August to the end of the year this year, that's what we'll collect as opposed to what we thought we were going to collect. So you can see here on those compare lines for property taxes, we have budgeted $990,000, but given our collection pattern to date, we may indeed get a touch over $1 million. Sometimes people pay back taxes. Sometimes people wait a few years to pay their taxes. So taxes are usually about 100% collectible, but you're not always collecting the taxes in the tax year that they're assessed. So the taxes that were assessed in 2016, we may collect some 2014, 2015 taxes for people who delayed their payments.
I'm just curious, does the 55%, did you find that same number in 2014 and 2013?
That's what I was going to say. I did not go back to the two prior years, which is not that difficult of an exercise. But really what I wanted to come up with is to see if this type of exercise even makes sense, and if the numbers come up to numbers that when you step back for a moment, if they make sense. And in some cases they really do. And there's one example we'll go on later that there's a good reason why the number really does not represent it. But it probably would be worthwhile to go back in those previous 2 years and come up with a blended three-year average or something like that.
Might help with future planning.
The more data points you have, the more accurate the it is. Okay. So you can see there that then you go along. Now, as you move over to the right-hand side, you can see the initial 2017 projected. These are the numbers that are already in the budget. And for the most part, the 17 numbers is a 3% addition to the 16 budget. So now the question is, does that fairly, you know, gross 3% across the board make sense given the collection patterns? And then so the last column, you can see the possible 2017 revenues with a 3% increase over what we think or what could possibly be the year-end 16. So on the first line, you can see the second-to-last column for property taxes with a 3% increase over what we think we're going to collect this year. It'd be at $1,106,000. And then the very last column, I put a suggested revision, either up or down, because sometimes this math doesn't necessarily make sense. And the reason I put $1 million in the right-hand column is that $1 million represents a 1% increase over last year. And the one thing about property tax is that you all get to decide whether it's a 1% increase, 2%, 3%. As you know, we have a significant amount of bank capacity. We have over $1 million in bank capacity because we pulled ourselves out of the voters chose to go out of or go into the fire district. And to do that, we artificially lowered our property tax levy this year equal to what we paid to the fire district last year to make the 2016 effect on our ratepayers identical. But again, when we can talk more about property tax later, we've factored in a 1% increase over last year, but we can have that conversation in the coming work sessions to see if you're comfortable with 1%, if you perhaps want to do a little bit more. But there is that's a number that is probably the most controllable number that we have because you literally set the rate. So you can see on the rest of this page, there really are some sales taxes, an interesting number. You can see in the actual columns for 13 and 14, $1,589,000 to $1,734,000 to 2015, $1,796,000. So it's a nice trend upward. And then you can actually see on the compare columns that we had budgeted $1,676,000. We may get as much as $1,009,000 this year just because we are getting sales tax come in fairly strong. Nothing huge, it's just more economic activity. And so then the last three columns, we have $1,794,000 in the budget. With this spreadsheet, we can go as high as $1,980,000. Whether we want to go that high with a very subjective and temperamental number is something that we can talk about. And you can go down the column, you can see the rest. The bottom line is that on the bottom right-hand corner, you can see that we might want to consider a number of about $4.7 million. Right now in the budget is $4.5, so there's a little bit of wiggle room there for either us to hopefully budget a healthy ending fund balance, because what I would not want to do is assume that we're going to get $4,737,000 and then plan on spending $4 million for it. We really do want to keep a budgeted surplus. The last thing you really want to do is run into a negative. So that's the format. On page 3 is for license and permits. It's the same exact, and you can see that there are some numbers over on the right-hand column. Some of the numbers I've suggested go down. Some of them I've suggested to slightly go up. But this right here, license and permits, is again one of those volatile numbers. It's single-family building permits, multifamily building permits, commercial building permits. And Yori can certainly speak more to this. But depending on the year, we have more commercial or more residential or more multifamily. But it's not something that you can say, next year we will have this, we will have this, and we will have that. It changes from year to year. The mix changes. And that's kind of where I came from. So you can see on the bottom right where I have a suggested 2017 total of $680,000. Right now we have $814,000 was the what's in here right now. I think those numbers are a little strong, given what we had this year. So, and you can see later on there's some numbers that get bigger. So when you blend this all together, it takes out some of those anomalies. Page 4 is intergovernmental. These are, and again, realize that by law we have to account for these monies this way. So it's strange that we have a whole line item dedicated to a revenue source that yields $2,000. But yet we have the same line item for something that might yield $1,006,000. So it's just bear with the accounting. Over on the right-hand side, you can see that there's two numbers for liquor excise and liquor profits. The reason I put $62,000 and $112,000 is that these are state-shared revenues. They're allocated on a per capita basis. So earlier this month, we received from the state of Washington their estimations of next year's liquor excise and liquor profits allocated to Ferndale on a per capita basis. And so those are actually the state's numbers, the $62,000 and the $112,000. And you can see they are lower than what mathematically could indeed fall out. But at the end of the day, what we're really talking about is $223,000 as opposed to $243,000, which the math might follow.
Would this include any of the marijuana?
No, the marijuana comes under sales tax.
Okay.
Right now we're recording it as a separate line item, but it gets aggregated into sales tax. And this year I think we've received something like, I think it was $7,000. It's not a huge, huge revenue source. At least it hasn't been so far. And given the growth of the industry, I don't see it, growing by tenfold over the next few years. I think people are out there, are out there. So
smoke local.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Page,
green movement.
Page five is our charges for services. And the one in here that really is a little dicey is the development review fees. Especially this year, we have had unbelievable development review fees this year. And the way the development review fees work as opposed to the building permits is that there's a lag. You sell the lots. Then you incur development. Actually, you incur development review fees when they're designing the subdivision. Then they sell the lots, and we get some REIT monies. But then, when people come in and buy the lots and build a home, that's when we get the single family building permits. So you can think of design review fees as kind of the leading crest of the wave. First, the development review fees come in, followed by the impact fees, and eventually the permit fees. So in some ways, one can inform what's going on out there in the future. But on that development review fee line, you can see that in 2003, we had 118, 2014, 96,000. Last year was 236,000, quite a big jump over 2014. Through this year, through August, we're already beating last year in total. So if you use that percentage, and this is where it gets a little dangerous sometimes, you can see that if we collect, last year we had collected 50% of our design review fees through August, so that means if that is true, which I don't think it will be, we'll collect over $530,000 a year in design review fees. That's not going to happen. That's just one of those anomalies that the math, and again, maybe having a few more years might help. So as a result, when you go all the way over to the far right-hand side, even though mathematically we could go as high as 546, I chucked it back down to 275, which is still not an insignificant amount, considering that just a few years ago we were getting just above 100,000. So it is a significant revenue source, but it is subject to fluctuation and market forces.
Do we know why our athletic field fees are going down, or?
I know back in the day we used to actually rent out the athletic fees, the concession stand there quite regularly. We stopped doing that as much as we used to. But no, I didn't really look in there to see what. They're fairly consistent, but you're right, they are down a little bit.
Where would the community center be when we start bringing in more money for that? Is that going to be under other fees and charges?
Probably. It'll be either one or the other, yeah, because the athletic and park and athletic fees, We could code it in either one, and we might want to start tracking that separately anyway, just to kind of see what the revenues are.
Yeah. Easier to keep track of how we're doing.
Yeah. So for this one on page five, even though right now we projected 948, we might go as high as 1,068,000, which is, again, not an enormous change. The next page, page six, is fines and forfeitures. These are, in essence, our court. And the numbers have been fairly consistent. I brought one a little bit up, brought a little one down. But again, between what we currently have projected, the 174 versus the 151, it really is, it's down in the noise level. It's not much of a difference. And then page seven is exactly what you saw last meeting, because this is the transfers and loans, it's interfund loans, transfers in, and this is not a revenue source insofar as these are not new money, except for maybe the investment interest, which is only $1,000. So going to page eight is an expanded version of page one. On page one, we actually had the actuals through 2016, and now in the big box on page eight, I've added in the preliminary 2017. So these are the numbers that we penciled into our draft budget right now. The possible 2017 revenues, which is that mathematical exercise of taking August, and then the suggested revisions. And I'm thinking before we settle in on some of these numbers, I think we do want to probably go back and pull in a few more years' worth of data just to see if there's some anomalies in the percentages. But what you can really see is that right now in our draft budget, we have $6.6 million. We, according to the math, it could go as high as 7.2, but I'm thinking probably down in the 6.8, which is still, you know, it's a $200,000 increase over what we had thought just a few months ago, given our collection patterns. If we were to go with a number that much bigger than the year before, again, I would want to see $100,000 or $150,000 ending fund balance, a cushion between what we think we're going to get in and what we think we're going to spend. I really do not think that we should all of a sudden think we have $200,000 more to spend next year in the current expense fund than we have last year. It's better, and we had this pleasant surprise last year, where last year the revenues came in much stronger, and we actually had, what, $400,000 a bonus, if you will. That's good news. I would hate to come back in a year from now and say, oh, you know those numbers, those formulas? Well, not so much. So I really want to try to keep it conservative, but, you know, you all have to figure out what your comfort level is. Sterky is going to be spending probably more time on this as the months go on, and so we'll probably be coming back with some numbers that might reflect even some more adjustments. But that's the current expense fund. Page 9 is the street fund. And there's one number that you really need to be keenly aware of, and it is the transfer from the Solid Waste Tax Fund 005. You can see in 15 it was $670,000, and 16 we budgeted $650,000, and then the reason why those are just nice, even, round numbers is that they are literally a plug number to make the street fund work. Pre-Iman initiatives, when car tabs were significant, street funds were funded with car tabs. Now, you can see that we don't, in fact, even the fuel tax, which is still a fairly good amount, we just don't get the monies, and this happened a decade ago, maybe not that long ago, when the car tabs changed. But when that changed, it fundamentally changed how cities fund the street fund. We are lucky enough to have the solid waste fund. Otherwise, we'd be using property tax or sales tax. And from those who've been on the council for a little while, we know how precious property tax and sales tax are to actually letting us do in the general fund those minimal things that we would want to do. So one of the biggest contributor to the street fund is the solid waste tax fund. And right now, those numbers, the 650, 725, they're just put in there because for 16 and 17, we wanted the ending fund balance to be positive. So we transfer those monies aren't transferred in automatically. They're transferred in as they're needed. So in many years, we transfer in a little bit less than what we call for, and in that case, is the money stay in the solid waste. Those boxes, as you go down on the left-hand side, what it really shows is that in 15 and 16, on the top, the revenues, if we're going to do something more than what we just normally do every single year, you know, strike the streets, mow the right-of-ways, you know, keep everything going. You know, if we want to do anything extra, we have to find the money to do that. And as you can see, in most cases, when we've passed our transportation benefit district, you can see those TBD monies coming in. So those TBD monies come in for specific one-time projects, and they're expended. Down at the bottom, you can see the expenditures, which were really kind of, you know, broken down as to what we did from an extra standpoint. Sometimes it's grant funding, sometimes it's TBD monies, but for the most part, in the street fund, once you add in the solid waste monies, you're pretty much at a zero sum right there. Now, if you want to do anything extra, you've got to pull in extra revenue from TBD or find a grant that comes in or some other revenue source. So the street fund is linked to the solid waste fund because without the solid waste fund, the street fund wouldn't be able to do anything at all. And if you want to do more than we've done in the past, you have to pull in these extra revenues.
Where's TBD listed?
What's that?
How much we're bringing in for TBD from year to year? Is that listed separately?
It's actually a separate TBD fund. I think right now it's about $350,000.
Okay. I just wondering if you had it like for, well, we started with 13, 14.
Yeah, I didn't bring that, but we'll put that together to kind of see the trend. And because it is a sales tax, it will ebb and flow, and I would anticipate right now that over the last few years you'd see it going up just like you've seen our sales tax go up.
What are you thinking about for 17 then?
Pretty much on line with the sales tax growth that you've seen in the general fund.
But maybe a number, like 380?
Yeah, probably around in there. I can get to that. Page 10, the last one we really have is the solid waste fund. And this is the same analysis you saw with the general fund for our actual solid waste revenues. And what makes this a little bit different is that, and you'll see this on the very last page, we have some rate increases programmed in. So not only do you have the growth in customer, that is, the growth in garbage disposal that you would anticipate seeing year after year, especially in an economy that's getting a little better and in a county where more people are moving into than moving out of. So you should see, absent any rate increases, kind of a slow increase in solid waste revenues because this revenue is based on gross revenues of the solid waste transfer stations. It's in essence a B&O tax. It's a gross revenue B&O tax just for solid waste. So in this case, right now for 2016, we've budgeted $1,697,000. If the collection pattern remains the same, we'll probably end up with about $1,733,000. Right now, we had $1,795,000 projected for next year. And given these numbers, it would be $1,785,000. But what is not factored into here is the 0.5% rate increase. Right now, a 1% brings in a little bit more than $100,000, so a 0.5% should bring in $50,000 just by itself. And as you heard, I think a few months ago, our understanding is that the tipping fee, the per-ton charge that every garbage truck pays when they go across the scales, is being increased by the solid waste handlers down at Slater. So if they raise their tipping fee 20%, 40%, their revenues go up 20% or 40%, and our solid waste tax goes up 20% or 40%. So this is something we're going to spend a little bit more time looking at because right now this is not factoring in any increase in tipping fees because we've not seen that yet reflected in our monthly revenues. We're hopeful that next month it'll actually show a little bit of a higher uptick. And this is not also reflected with a 0.5% rate increase next year.
Were we planning to do a 0.5%? Or are you just throwing that out?
No, we actually have it. In fact, on page 11, we have in you can see in the green, back in 2015, we have an ordinance that says it'll be 13% in 2016, 13.5% in 2017, and 14.5% in 2018. So those are programmed increases out through 2018, and you can see how those increases. And we'll again when we get the newest numbers from the solid waste transfer station as to potential tipping fee increase, then we'll be able to go in and add that new tipping fee rate to an increase in the actual solid waste tax rate to come up with. So these numbers that start hitting $2 million in 2018 will probably be higher. They really will. But with that said, the solid waste fund, and now we can look at the boxes on the left-hand side. You can see the small box up on top where it says transfer to street. Again, we talked about this before. This is to make the street fund work. And then the transfer, right now we transfer $100,000 into our LEF, our Law Enforcement and Firefighters Retiree Fund. The next box are people. And that's why you can see those numbers progress out through 2022. The long-range planning, the police office assistant, second parks worker, second detective, code enforcement officer, and 25% of the one FTE that we added last year that goes to streets. So you can see that how when you start looking at those numbers, we've already kind of earmarked a fairly good amount of our revenues for people. The next one down is stuff. And so as a result, you kind of see one-time expenditures, except for, if you remember, we had the conversation about the police cars. We've agreed to, through 2018, buy three police cars each year, and that's where that money's coming from. Otherwise, in 15 and 16, you can just see the one-off little programs that we put in there. Not big numbers, but, again, there's some ability each year to come back and say, if we want to do something that's relatively modest, the solid waste fund sometimes has that revenue for those one-time expenditures. The next box down is all of our debt service payments. And you can pretty much read what they are. We bought the land where the library is now for Lavounty, the LID that we did down there for the extension of the road, the police station, library, Pioneer Pavilion. Here it says sequestration. And for those that don't know what that is, we, a few years back, issued what's called Build America bonds. At the time, it was something to encourage economic development and economic growth in the whole U.S. And what it really was is the U.S. government came in and said, if you issue bonds for certain purposes, we, the U.S. government, will pay a little bit of your interest for you to help build America. Well, that was great until Congress decided to become perhaps even a little more dysfunctional. And if you remember the sequestration where they said, okay, across-the-board cuts. Well, one of those across-the-board cuts was to the Build America Bond program. So right now you can see in here that about $4,500, and every year we get a new number. It goes up by a few hundred dollars up, a few hundred dollars down. It's not a huge, huge fluctuation. But right now, what we thought the government, the U.S. government, was going to give us was $4,500. They still are giving us some money for the interest, but just not as much. So the $4,500 we had to make up. And so that's where we made it. And then the bonds for the police station, the library bonds, and the local program, which is the one we just did for the heavy equipment. So you can kind of see how the debt service eats up about. And then on the very, very bottom, there's the Pioneer Pavilion operations, the Pioneer Pavilion. That was that seed money that we kind of stuck in there just to get things working. So for 17, we'll come back and see if the tipping fee has been adjusted. We'll also look to see what the growth of solid waste revenues have been. So that number may indeed go up, but you can see right now, just given our existing street fund, LEF, our people, our cars, and our debt service, right now there is no extra money. If you look just at the 2017 revenues, there really is no money in the solid waste fund to do much of anything else until we maybe go back and carve out. But if we go back on these numbers, it's still probably we're not going to be talking about, $500,000. It may be $100,000, it may be a couple $100,000. But in some ways, it's also a good thing to keep a decent balance in the solid waste fund because it is one of those revenue sources that is kind of discretionary. As you probably can understand, our property tax and our sales tax are pretty well spoken for in the general fund. So it's nice to have, even if it's a small amount separate, So in case something happens, you have a little bit of a backup to go back onto.
Council, questions of Greg?
Councilor Watson. Start talking about the wastewater treatment plant, how to pay for that. I'd rather start thinking about that in 2017.
Exactly. Yeah, I believe this next meeting we'll be bringing you the design contract for the plant. Yeah, we will. Yeah. So on October 3rd, we'll be entering into a contract for the design. That will really kind of initiate a multi-year process where we design and then eventually build. So 2017 is probably going to be a very good year to talk about that, because we'll be in the design process. As the design process moves forward, the cost estimation for the construction of the facility also gets a little better. As you get to know more and more and more about the design, and you can also then kind of refine your, because right now they're saying it'd be about $18 million for the new wastewater treatment plant. So as the 2017 progresses, that number might go up, it might go down, but we'll certainly be able to start playing around with, and this is one thing that Syracuse is going to be doing is I think coming back with some alternatives, because as you are aware, we have enough debt service that's being paid off this year. We're retiring the old bonds for the wastewater treatment plant this year, and that and we don't know what the interest rates are going to be, and that's always the wild card, because if we can find some 1.5% monies from the state or the feds or what have you, that's a whole lot better than 3.5% or 4% money out in the open market, and it really makes a huge difference when you're talking $15 to $18 million in bonds. So we'll be able to come back and I think a little bit more deeply about how we want to pay for it, because I think it's fair to say right now that the debt service that's being recovered by the payoff of our old bonds will be insufficient to cover the debt service for all of the new bonds. But what that delta is what we need to figure out and then come back to you as soon as we get a better idea of the cost estimates, as they start getting a little better, as we also get a clearer idea on a crystal ball standpoint of what future bond interest rates are going to be, and if we are indeed going to be able to find some 1.5% or 1% or very, very low interest rate bonds. There is a possibility, even though these are always harder to get, that we might even be able to get a combination of some grants with loans. So to the extent you get grants, that's great. Usually they come with very, very low interest loans. And so what we may find us doing is coming back and suggesting some phased increases in rates, because this treatment plant's going to be built over a period of time. So we might be able to maybe phase in a small rate increase now to build up a little bit of revenue, and then have it maybe ladder out in the next couple of years, so there isn't this one-time large rate increase and people can kind of feel the pain slowly.
Okay, what's the annual payment on that debt that's going to be paid off this year?
For some reason, I think it's about $800,000.
Yearly, okay. Yeah. Which should be about $10 million.
Exactly.
Of borrowing power. There, right. Gotcha.
At my place of employment, we had USDA come out, and I actually asked them about loans for our wastewater facility. And Darla O'Connor from Rural Development in Mount Vernon, she emailed me some new information on community facility direct loan program that could help. Okay. So I'll forward that email to you. She wants to come out and meet with Ferndale, so whenever you're available.
Good. Yeah, good. Yeah, Darla's been down there for as long as I've been around. So, yeah, and she's a wealth of information. Sometimes that USDA Rural Development, we are not rural enough sometimes, because it goes by size of community and a few other things. But, yeah, we really want to beat the bushes. Right now, Mike Olinger, our wastewater treatment plant operator, he's looking through DOE, because DOE may have some grants, one of those grant and loan combination out there. There's also the possibility, too, and we've brought this up before, but for different purposes, is the county's EDI monies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember, they actually got the Linden received monies for, I think it was their water, maybe not their wastewater. Yeah. But it was economic development, because without enough water and or wastewater, you really can't grow. So there's kind of a history of the EDI looking favorably towards those, whether the composition of the EDI board, which is subject to change and political winds, whether they will continue to feel that water, sewer, in this case sewer, is a good use of EDI funds. That's something for them to decide. But it's also another great source for one of those grant and loan combinations.
Councilmember Watson.
I would also like us to talk about connection fees. I mean, the wastewater treatment plant is being driven by growth, so I don't think that the people who are here now should bear all the burden
for
the expansion. I mean, and if we need to raise our connection fees, I'd rather do it sooner rather than later, so it gives us a couple of years to try and get
that will
funds.
Certainly be part of this analysis, because in a perfect world, and I've yet to be anywhere where it actually works out in reality, but in a perfect world, you're right, connection fees are a mathematical derivative of your future capital needs. Mm-hmm. You know, for all of you who currently live here, you've already paid for your wastewater treatment plant. So what we're building is the wastewater treatment plant for people who aren't here yet. Mm-hmm. And so in an ideal world, connection fees, impact fees, go towards funding your capital, future capital projects, while your rate revenue pays for your current operations. But it's never enough. Unless you have connection fees that are astronomical, or you have growth that is, again, out of the world, you can never set that process up so that you can separate those two revenue sources and take connection fees solely for capital and rate revenue solely for operations. Because we do have maintenance, ongoing maintenance, and that's everyone's responsibility. We're doing that now with our pump stations. As you drive around the city, you see them digging frantically with our pump stations. Well, that's not so much because of future. That's really repairing what we've already had in place. It needs just to be upgraded. So your capital expenditures have a mixture of taking care of what you already have, as well as literally expanding your abilities into the future. So that's something that you'll need to talk about. Not unlike the traffic impact fees, it's one of those. There is no right answer. It's whatever you feel the right answer is, and you're going to have the same dynamics with water sewer connection fees as you have for traffic impact fees. You don't want to set them so high so the cost of homes are outrageous and no one comes, but you don't want to set them too low so you're leaving money on the table, because these connection fees, again, are probably a function of the cost of homes, because someone's got to pay the fees, the connection fees. And it's either the developer who then passes it on to the homeowner, but in most cases it's the homeowner who still shells out the money after they've already bought the house. So whether it's really a kind of a tomato tomato, or it still comes out of the same pot of money. So that's kind of in a nutshell. If you're comfortable, and this is really what I wanted to kind of go back to, if you're comfortable with this kind of trend analysis, I found it useful. It probably would benefit from, as Councilmember Watson said, not taking just a snapshot of last year, but maybe taking a snapshot of a couple years, which is not difficult to do. I just ran out of time for me to put this all together, and I didn't want to go through that exercise if you felt like this approach was hazardous or it brought with it some issues.
Council, more questions? Okay.
Are we going to talk about decision curves?
Yes. I did not bring them here tonight, but I do want to say that for the most part, all of the department heads have given me their decision cards. So if any of the council members, and I believe there may be some, are interested in throwing something out, please, and if you don't have that form that I mailed out here a while back, let me know and I'll send it out again. And again, probably next time we'll spend just a brief amount of time on these revenues. And once I see the heads nodding in the correct manner as far as kind of locking in what we think our major revenues are going to be, then we can slide immediately over to the expenditure side and talk about, other than just, you know, keeping everyone employed and keeping the lights on, what extra other things, because that's really at the heart of what a decision card is. It's something we haven't done before that is either worthwhile one time or worthwhile ongoing. That's why on that form, too, I tried to make it such that the proposer of the decision thought about what's the current cost and then what's the care and feeding cost as time goes on, because especially when it comes to hardware and software, hardware wears out, software needs annual licenses, so sometimes this one-time cost carries with it kind of some ensuing smaller costs into the future that we need to be cognizant of. On the revenue side for decision cards, one of the issues you'll need to think about, and it's probably something we should think about sooner rather than later, is property tax. Right now, as I said, we have a 1% increase in here. If you feel like you would like to do a little bit more, right now a 1% is about
$10,000.
Yeah. We're not gonna go build a bridge for $10,000, but $10,000 is still $10,000. So the good thing about the property tax increase, it is the gift that keeps giving. You get $10,000 this year, but you also get that same $10,000 next year, and the year after that, and the year after that. So it is not one-time revenue. It does tend to compound and add on to itself. But I can also understand politically how reticent some folks might be to even slightly increase property tax, because for the most part, our citizens have a hard time understanding that when we raise our property tax 1%, it brings in $10,000, which is, I don't know what the number would be for a home.
$2 Yeah.
So it's yes, we're raising your taxes, but it's probably not realistically an enormous amount.
So we talked a lot, or we've thrown around the word the bank capacity and property tax, and that's because we've taken the fire district out of our taxing district. Correct.
That's why it's so big. That's not why it exists.
What do you mean?
Years ago, back in the days of yore, there used to be what called the 106. And it used to be that cities could raise their taxes by no more than 6% a year.
Right.
Outrageous when you think about it. Now we argue over 1 or 0. It used to be, the argument used to be 4, 5, 6. Well, the way it works is, and it worked the same way it was 106 as it is to 101. So if you take your 1%, you take it. If you don't take your 1%, you bank it. So over 4 years, if we took zero increases in property tax, we would have 4% over here that we could take some or all at once. So back when the days when it was 106, there were cities that had 15, 20, 30% of bank capacity, some pretty big numbers. Now it's very common for cities to have 1%, 2%, 3%, because they take their 1% because you just can't live on the exact same monies next year because of the cost of living. And 1% is such a paltry amount. So up until back here a year or so ago, when we still were not members of the fire district, we had a bank capacity, I think it was about 3%. I think that's what we had, 3 or 4%. That was it. So, and back then, each 1% was $20,000. So we had about $60,000 of bank capacity because our property taxes were about $2 million a year, not $1 million a year. Because you get 1% of what you collect. So if you collect $2 million a year and you want 1% more next year, you get $20,000 more. Now that we only collect $1 million, even the stuff we banked was cut in half, the value of it. So now every 1% we take, we only get $10,000. So that 4% that was back there that equals about $60,000, that 4% now equals about $30,000. But since we took our levy amount and brought it down by $1 million to equal the swap from property taxes levied by the city to property taxes levied by the fire district, that entire $1 million that we said we don't need it anymore because you guys are going to get taxed, all of that got shuffled over to the bank capacity column. So we have $1,020,000 or something like that in bank capacity that we could take some, all, or none, forever.
So when the fire district, we were separated from the fire district, though, the real effect on an individual's property taxes was nothing, correct? So in a sense that I'm paying the same amount of property tax, you know, today, with some minor changes, right, that I was paying back when the city of Ferndale, was paying the fire district.
Right.
Right? So that bank capacity, in effect, though, is a significant, that $1 million of bank capacity is a pretty significant increase to somebody's property tax if we were to take the whole thing.
Yes.
So in a sense, we are, in effect, raising people's property taxes significantly. If we were to take all of our bank capacity?
Yes.
Big time.
Okay.
But because of that, the diminishment of the value of every 1%.
Right.
If we took 2% next year, we would be taking $20,000,
right,
which would be equal to the 1% that we took or we could have taken last year or the year before that or the year before that.
Okay. It's not straightforward.
No.
But I think I get it.
So for you to be able to stand in front of a constituent and say, it's cost you nothing to join the fire district, we would not dive into that $1 million bank capacity.
Right.
Now, if we took 2% next year, $20,000, you could still look at them and say, that's the same as we would have taken last year with 1%.
Right.
Or
that's
$4.
That's maybe a good exercise. What is the hypothetical bank capacity if we were still on? It's probably 4 or 5 or 6%.
Yeah.
What
we used to have, 4%. It was about 60 grand, 60, 70 grand is what we had if we were to take it all at once.
Right.
If we had like 2.4 or something bank capacity, did that go away? Or did it turn into something else?
It just got halved in value. That is, you'd have to take twice as much on a percentage basis to get the same dollars.
And remember, the fire district will take it every year. They always take the 1%.
So the fire district is going to take their increase every year outside of what we do.
Right.
So
the combined hit is both what the fire district gets there. $20,000 or $10,000 plus our...
I don't know what the property tax is.
Their geographic area is a lot bigger.
They pull in a whole big... Yeah. And that was the whole... That was the reason why we got whammied, because our tax assessed valuations were going up when, because of the disputes out at Cherry Point, the fire district tax assessed valuations were going down. So in order for the fire district to collect the same dollar, they had to raise their rate.
Right.
So they took their rate and kicked it up, and then took that kicked up rate against our increased valuation, and it was a boom, boom for us every year.
Any more questions? Good questions, guys. Councilmember Watson.
I'm curious about the EMS levy then. So that's going to be in addition. So we're already paying $1 million.
Right.
The taxpayers are. So for the EMS levy, they want us to pay additional. That would be an additional levy.
Yeah.
$130.
That's brand new money, never levied before money. Okay. So,
So 50 cents per thousand is what they're putting forward? I haven't seen the exact wording.
Yeah, and 50, that's a whole lot of money. Well, we remember with the Parks District, we were throwing around 50 cents per thousand?
Yeah.
And people were going, oh, my God. Yeah. Well, I guess it's different with EMS.
Still,
oh,
my God.
Counselor, are you ready for a break or any last minute questions? Finance Director Circa Talman, any questions or comments?
No, I think you did a good job.
Very good.
Yeah, Circa was her first day today. Mark Peterson, you remember him? Blast from the past. Yeah, we rolled him out of the old folks' home and dusted him off.
He was here all day today.
That's right. I cleaned him up. So he actually came in today and spent the whole day with Circa.
Yeah.
I believe he's might be coming back Wednesday.
We don't think anybody has ever spent that much time with Mark in one room. You got the record for sure. Congratulations.
And as geeky as it sounds like they were having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Council, let's take 10.